So we have seen so far that there are three statuses of life. The first is a life which is completely bound materially in chains, in rigid chains of habit, grooves of habit. It doesn't want to change, and its favorite pastime is eating and sleeping. It's a tamasic life actually, and it's a life which literally lives to eat. So this is what we read about the first degree, where life is mechanically bound. For this life, the body is the self and nothing else. And then there is another layer of life, which is the life of desire, and its law is struggle to devour, to enjoy, to increase and multiply by taking into itself other lives. And we may add to dominate, to crush, all ambition, all this, what we call today is competitive individualism, is all the flowering of this life in man. It is full of rajas. And this is what we can say is the old asuric terminology, asuric life, where one lives to devour, hunger that is death, and to fulfill one's desires. And Sri Aurobindo beautifully explains what is behind it, what is behind each one. But this life will also evolve further and evolves further to a more mentalized life, a sattvic existence, where there is a need of balance, harmony, love. Same truth Sri Aurobindo is revealing here in a very beautiful way. The soul, as mind begins to develop, not mind at the mercy of the vital, but the life of the thinker, the sage. And it finally, as it evolves under the pressure of psychic, it flowers into the sage, the saint. This is what we read last time, that out of this third status of life, which is primarily about love, where the rules of the game change, here kindliness, affection, sympathy, giving becomes the rule, rather than devouring and taking in. And this giving happens because behind it is the psychic which begins to develop and begins to press upon the mentalized man. And as it presses, life begins to seek for something else. And that is, it seeks unity, it seeks harmony. But it doesn't know how to do it. If it is just unity, then there have been attempts to create unity by blurring out and blotting out all diversity, by uniformity, by regimentation. But that's not the original plan. That's the problem we are here to solve. So it is unity in diversity. That becomes very challenging, because individual wills clash against other individual wills, in groups clash against other groups. So Sri Aurobindo says it cannot be materialized unless we ascend to the fourth status. And that fourth status is the supramental life. And he gives us a hint how it evolves. Little bit he has given. He'll elaborate, give us in great detail. So this is the journey of life. This is where it must move. It is moving. And he made a prophecy, or rather cautioned us, that those individuals and groups which practice unity, association, camaraderie, love, cooperation, they are the ones which will evolve and go into the fourth status. And those that do not are predestined to wither off. Now, how can Sri Aurobindo say they are predestined? Because behind all this is the supermind, which has predetermined everything. So in a way, destiny is already written in the mind of the cosmic poet. It is unfolding. So individually, we have a choice either to play against the evolutionary surge, at cross with the divine will, against the current, swim against the current. The result is obvious. Or we can swim aligned with the current. Not current has nothing to do with current affairs, but the current towards which evolution is leading us. All else is destined to collapse. It's how it will happen, what time. It's very interesting that, you know, how previous pralayas, these memory. See, there was life flourishing before this pralaya came into being. I mean, this pralaya after which we have the story of the present Satyog cycle, which is the seventh cycle. So, sixth pralaya We don't use the word pralaya in science. We use the word ice age. It was because of a volcanic eruption. And I'm forgetting the name of the volcano. Somewhere in Indonesia. And the whole sky and it was filled with ash for 5 days. 6 days. It was enough to... It only 1,000 people survived. Now this is what has happened. Very interestingly, this event is partially described in the Mahabharata. Who describes? Markandeya Rishi. He says, you know, humanity was once destroyed and ash was falling all over. It is so, such a description of, I think it is Mount Abbey, if I am not mistaken. He describes it. He says ki that's how it was destroyed. So, what has to collapse will collapse and it will find its way. We should not worry about that. Our concern should be what is in the offing, and what is in the offing is the supramental creation. And last thing we read was that either man will evolve into a divine humanity or he will be replaced by the Superman. Now this is before the supramental manifestation. So I suppose now we can say man will evolve towards the divine superhumanity of the future. And this question was left hanging for a long time. When Sri Aurobindo was asked about, sir, will earth and humanity be saved? He says, it is not about this civilization, whether it will be saved or not. By civilization, we mean what values we hold today. But earth will certainly be saved. These are his words. Whether the civilization will be saved or not, he said, Mother has left the question hanging and I can only say the same. But this is certain that the earth will be saved. Meaning thereby, though there will be mass destructions, there will be something which will survive, evolve and grow into the new creation. So all this is in the not so far off future, but certainly not immediate future also. But things seem to be moving in that direction. But that apart, now there is something very interesting. So the interesting part is that we have two accounts. You know, normally we have those, I am very poor at it, so pardon my ignorance, but maybe, you know, fixed deposits or whatever. The other is recurring deposit or mutual funds or whatever. It keeps growing. So one is something which you can immediately withdraw and cash upon. And the other is which is growing, drawing from all over. We don't know. Mutual fund where the person is investing, the bank is investing, but it grows. And it grows and ultimately it may grow exponentially. It is open to the public space domain from where it is drawing and exhausting. So also we have these two layers of life. One is the surface personality. And the other is the inner being. All this Sri Aurobindo will describe in great detail, but because the chapter we are entering now, chapter 21, which is the double soul in man, so Sri Aurobindo touches it. So what is this surface personality? Surface personality is what we normally are aware of for each other and call as ourselves. What is it formed of? It's formed of one life's experiences. It's formed by heredity, by schooling, growing up, conditioning, custom, tradition, or whatever we have learnt from childhood. And it's a very small part. And we call it myself. That's why we say, I am like this, I don't like this, I like this. All this is surface personality. And that's how we understand the world. And people often say, what I have experienced in life, what I have seen, as if, you know, they know the whole knowledge based on one single bandwidth of experience. And Sri Aurobindo says, this is only a fraction, there is a larger life behind. So behind this surface personality, there is the inner being. And inner being is open to the cosmic universal forces. And it acts sometimes through the inner being. Subconscious things rise up from below, from our past, which we have forgotten. But also superconscious fire, superconscious intimations, they also enter the inner being. And that's how life keeps taking unexpected turns. Because there is the inner being which is open to the universal. It is not tied to the outer surface personality. So through that the intimation sometimes comes. Go to Pondicherry. Now we, you know, why? I know one parent at least, because, you know, it's a sort of sad story, but how this inner being can operate is a couple had come, they had four children, they lost all four children on one moment. All four grown-up children. Saddest story I have ever heard in my life, most tragic. And then they were obviously, any word will be less, broken, shattered, and in a silliest possible way. It's not even that there was a sudden accident. Anyways, that detail is not important. And so while they were in that intense suffering, they thought, people advised them, why don't you go somewhere and just, you know, not knowing what to do, they discovered that 2 days before the all the four died, one of the child, the youngest one, he had booked a ticket for them for Pondicherry. That you guys should go and, you know, take a little holiday. Just imagine. So just to honor his wish, of course they knew about Mother and Shurbindo, but long back and little bit. They said, okay, let's come here. And that's when they came here and they met me. And of course you don't know what to say. What can you say in such instances? Except that go and cry your heart out to the mother. And the way their life turned, it's unimaginable. Now they are completely under mother's wings, in their refuge, in their service, and so many beautiful touches. Now why this happened? Strange. A tragedy, which Shobindu uses a line in Savitri, digging a tunnel through emergency, because there are threads which are kept inside, we don't know. Of course the mother saw a dream 2 days before their death and it was very, but nobody, you know, takes it seriously or understands the import. But how things were already as if prefixed, pre-planned. So superconscious suddenly touches us and our life changes, not always in such a dramatic way, but something like this happens because there is this, behind the outer mind there is the inner mind, and the inner mind receives the suggestion, accepts it and follows the trail of somebody else. This inner mind, an instrument can come who may just suggest to us, oh, Pondicherry is a very nice place. Like we used to hear always, suddenly during that time from everywhere, radio, this, that, Pondicherry is coming from everywhere. So this is how there is an inner mind behind the outer mind. Equally, there is an inner life, like this double lifeline, which is behind this outer life and its desires, its likings and dislikings, which pushes itself through and imposes itself. In all developed beings, this inner mind and inner life is stronger than the outer. But when we are less developed, that's what in astrology they say. If outer line is kamjor or weak, if the inner life line is strong, they say it'll take care. So there is an inner life line and there is also an inner physical. So even when the body is attacked by an illness, if the inner physical is strong, robust, in good health, it will impose itself. That's where the blueprint even of the body is there. So all this will, and this forms the protective envelope. So all this is beautiful occult science, which Aurobindo will reveal in great detail. But here he just touches upon it. And behind this self that we call as myself, I don't like, I like. And sometimes we do the same mistake of imposing it even on the divine. That's why Mother says, people commit plenty of stupidities. That's okay, that's their business. But this stupidity is compounded when they quote me and say, Mother likes this and Mother does not like this. And then she says, what do they know? What do they know? What Mother likes and does not like? She is beyond likes and dislikes. So that's in another dimension altogether. So up till now, we have seen that all the three principles of existence, mind, life and body, we have seen these three levels, they have to be derived from the original Sachidananda. There cannot be a somewhere else, suddenly out of the blue they come. It is out of the one they have all emerged. So out of consciousness, we see Through the supermind, the consciousness aspect takes the form of mind. Everything has to come through the supermind. It differentiates, not divides, differentiates. Force, consciousness always implies consciousness and force. So force comes through the supermind and manifests as life. So life is always like that, horsepower. Life always is like a force which wants to even desire, even the force of love, which is all about giving, as we read last time. So it's a force which is going, moving in action. Where does matter come from? That Sri Aurobindo will discuss just after this chapter, which we'll do next time. Very beautiful 3-4 chapters. It's on matter. So matter comes from Sat, existence. Out of one existence, exists all existences are born. So all of our are chinna chinna existence. We exist, but in a very miniature way. Divine is all existence. All of us have a little consciousness. Divine is all consciousness. All of us have a little force, we'll all agree. And divine is all force. So it's so logical. We are miniature divinities. But we seek fullness. But what happened to Ananda? Where is Ananda? Divine is Sat Chit Ananda. Sat becomes matter. Chit becomes life, mind, all through the supermind. So in supermind, all of them are differentiated. Otherwise, it's not possible. They have to go through supermind where they are differentiated. Force becomes life. What happens to delight? So there comes the soul. The soul in man is a drop of that delight. And see, that's why we understand delight is Anandamaya Krishna. And therefore the soul's intimate connection with Krishna. There is a whole way of understanding Radha Krishna as Radha being the soul yearning for Krishna, the Lord. And we see this in Sri Aurobindo's Radha Krishna. It is yearning. It is the soul. And it's feminine. Actually, Sri Aurobindo also uses the word feminine for psychic being. Out of the mystic even in man's heart, the heavenly psyche must put off her veil and step into common nature's crowded room. So this is the soul element. So there is a so-called soul, which is not soul, but we think that it is me. But there is a true I, the true me. And that's what Sri Aurobindo will reveal to us today in great detail later on. But he's right now like a great musician setting the first notes. So we'll talk about the soul a little bit here. And that's why when people say, how to know who is my soulmate? So I say, first find the soul. Soulmate is for later on. When we live on the surface vital, we'll keep mistaking every other person as my soulmate based on likes and dislikes. But it has nothing to do with that. Likes and dislikes are all surface personality. What happens to this personality at death? It's destroyed. Nothing is carried on. What is carried on are all these experiences in the inner being. They are stored in the psyche. They are a sense and that carries on. All this surface personality, me, I am so and so, and this my dad, this my mom, this my... All that whole panorama of things with which we are so attached crashes. Nothing survives. It's gone. But there is the inner mind, inner life, inner physical also. That gets integrated. Even the inner physical, we read yesterday. And it gets integrated with the psychic. And that's how the soul, which is a seed or a spark of the divine fire or light, if you want to put it technically, it develops a psychic personality. And that psychic personality, in that we have the imprint of the true mental, true vital, true physical. It has a personality, and it is this which will eventually crystallize as the supramental being. That our mother describes that. So there is such a great importance of understanding that what I call as myself is not myself. And the first step of yoga is to discover the true soul. And that's why the mother says we must step back and see what are the things of real importance in our life. And that's the whole journey of man. So the double soul in man chapter 23, sorry, not 21. And Aurobindo speaks initially about the three status, and then he says the third, we'll come to the third in this very page, 5-6 lines below. The third is love, page 231. The third is love, because first two let's leave behind, you know, desire and mechanical subservience. Let's talk about the third. The third is love. But what is love? Love not as a hunger, but as what Shelley described. I cannot give you what men call love. He says, this is not what is love. And mother also says, love is nothing to do with wanting, possessing, dominating, crushing. That's not love. It's a hunger. It's a desire. Even when true love manifests, the desire may come, but it begins to change its whole color. So there is the desire to give. The third is love, which seeks both to possess and be possessed, to receive and to give itself. The fine flower of the fourth, its sign of perfection, we conceive as the pure and full emergence of the original will, the illumined fulfillment of the intermediate desire. So it is fulfillment. Why? Because it is through the psychic door that one can open to the universal and the infinite. So the moment we open to the universal, then the need of my little personal love, that goes away, because all universe is expressing itself through that individual soul. Swami Vivekananda said something very interestingly in one of his addresses or a letter. When somebody asked him about delight, he says, see, we all experience some happiness. Imagine if all the joy in the universe comes into you, what will be your state? So that's what happens when we open to the universe. Automatically desire ceases. Everything is already self-possessed. We don't need to, because we draw closer to the divine to whom everything belongs. We begin to become trustees. Trustees of everything that we have materially, intellectually, emotionally, and we know that now the law of life is to share and give. Because the more we give, the more it increases. It's a beautiful writing of the mother on charity in volume 2, where she explains this very beautifully. You begin to understand you are a trustee. And to sell a product, to sell something, to sell, unfortunately, talks on Sri Aurobindo and the mother, courses, all this, it's not in tune with to sell knowledge. That's why mother never kept a fee in here in the ashram school. And when she was asked, she said, because knowledge was never sold in India. It is to be given. Everything has to be given. Of course, how much we can receive or something we want to give back in return, that's where gratitude comes in. That's why in the ancient time there was Guru Dakshina, no fees for the Guru. Because children had to feel that they have received something worthwhile and this urge to give. But there was nothing like a price tag attached to anything, because we are all trustees. We can't claim anything, including the doctor who charges fees. So best doctors are those who can put a box and say, if you want to put something, put. Otherwise, divine will take care. I know of actual doctors with whom this has happened. And the divine has his ways to take care. They are, because they are more evolved and entered into that state. The high and deep satisfaction of the conscious interchange of love with a capital L by the unification of the state of the possessor and possessed. Then whom will you say go away and separate? And can you cut your own part and say go away? Possessor and the possessed become one. That's why divine cannot say to anyone, go away. And even if you apparently go away, divine is always there. He cannot, because everything is himself, not even his, he himself. So he cannot do that. In the divine unity of souls, which is the foundations of the supramental existence. So this is where we have to reach, and all the steps and stages have been shown to us. And then he speaks about that delight, hidden delight, which is in all things. Page 232. The world being what it is, it could not be otherwise. What a statement. What is this world? Again, our surface personality has a notions. So what is this world? For the world is a masked form of Sachidanand. This one sentence is enough to give hope, to give light. So every time we see a patient, oh, bichara, oh, such a pain, no. We can say, oh, Sachidanand Brahman, why are you wearing this mask? At least one doctor I know used to do it, an Ayurveda doctor. And we found, why is this medicine having a greater healing effect? He said, no, nothing. I give the same medicine. I just do pranam inwardly and say, if you start doing pranam like this everywhere, ashram it is allowed, but outside, then people will think you have gone crazy. So, but, he says, inwardly I say, oh, Sachidanand, why are you wearing this mask? So when two people are fighting, supposing you say, hey, Sachidanand, Brahma, Devi, why are you wearing this mask of anger? Always I add, and vice versa. So you see, what will happen? The other person will give a response, if not in sympathy, you are an incorrigible idiot. But the anger will go away because you are telling a truth. So your purpose is fulfilled. Because that is the truth of the world, that it is a mask form of Sachidanand. And the nature of the consciousness of Sachidanand, and therefore the thing in which his force must always find and achieve itself, is divine bliss and omnipresent self-delight. Sachidanand doesn't need something else to be happy. We need, because the law of desire is operating. In desire, when we get happiness. In love, when we give, we get happiness. But in Sachidanand, the joy is inherent. So it doesn't need anything. It is always full of delight wherever it goes. Fallen, I am divine. Even in rags, I am God. That's the experience. So it's always experiencing the Sachidanand. And if by reason of egoistic division that delight is missed, why we miss it? Sir, we don't experience, because we are living in that little surface personality. I am Mr. So-and-so. Sometimes it can be very painfully, we have to realize it, when someone came, a retired army colonel, and he went to, one of the ashram guest houses, and he had to wait. His booking was there, but somebody else. And when he came, he said, you don't know, I am Colonel so-and-so, and I fought in this war, full of himself. Some people are very full of themselves. Then this man told him, see, we don't have time to listen to all this. The fellow was weeping, and he comes and tells me, he says, see, in your ashram, they are, he told me like this, and I had tears in my eyes. I say, see, this is the effect of the ashram. He was basically saying, you are much more than a colonel. He said, is it so? I said, yes, because each one is divine. I don't know, something he understood. I said, okay, then it's fine. He was stuck in that colonelhood. So this is where, these things come to remind us. So it is held back because of the ego. Because we want respect, then I will feel happy. If somebody insults me, I'll be unhappy. When mother was asked this question, mother, he insults me so much. Mother's one-liner was, the soul never feels insulted. Mother, can't you make an arrangement where the other person is away from me, because their rooms were next to each other? He says, no, you have to stop being insulted. Stop feeling insulted. That's how in ashram we progress. You have to stop feeling insulted. So how everything can become. So he reveals these things so beautifully. And if it is held back behind a veil, if it is represented as its own opposite, sometimes this delight takes the form of what? Suffering. Why? Why do we suffer? What we want that didn't happen. As simple as that. It could apply to bodily health, this, that, what we want. That didn't happen. The degree of suffering is the gap between what we want and what is. How to bridge that gap? One way is, of course, widening into infinity. Second way, which is the simplest way, let thy will be done, you know better. Hoi hai soi jo rama rachi rakha ko kari tark bada vaishaka. Things take a certain form. Divine knows best what is best for myself, for another person. My task is to aspire, to surrender, to give myself more and more, to act based on my deepest will. But to suffer because things didn't happen, even we read last time, Shobindu is saying that the divine may even choose failure because something is not meant to happen immediately, yet effort has to be put in that direction. And there is a letter of Shobindu where he says, sir, and we often assess that it is divine will based on success or failure. So based on that, in 1857, people would have said divine does not want India to be independent because the mutiny failed. So Shobindu says, writes in response, what if failure suits the divine purpose well? Even if you see Shobindu's initial that revolutionary movement, which he had started, awakened, that did not bring immediate fruit. It took another route to bring fruit. So it's not about success or failure. We are tied to it, so we suffer. So delight wears three masks. Pleasure, pain and indifference. These are the, Shobindu describes in Savitri as the attire of the rapturous dancer on the way, which he sheds one by one. Pleasure, pain and indifference, they are the triple attire of the rapturous dancer on the way. Just imagine what a image. And it sheds one by one. Even as being is masked in death, consciousness figures as the inconscient and force mocks itself with the guise of incapacity, then that which lives cannot be satisfied, cannot either rest from the movement or fulfill the movement except by laying hold on this universal delight, which is at once the secret, total delight of its own being, and the original, all-encompassing, all-informing, all-upholding delight of the transcendent and immanent Sachidananda. To seek for delight is therefore the fundamental impulse and sense of life. To find and possess and fulfill it is its whole motive. Universe is an unfolding of delight. But because we can conceive it, see, when tsunami came, a lot of people suffered as a result. But the same ocean somewhere else, there were people who were swimming, enjoying, taking a bath. Same day, same moment, same ocean. Different experiences. Would you say sea is bad? Or would you say sea is wonderful? Sea is in its own delight. For it swallowing and bringing out countless forms, nature does acts like that. But because of the egoistic sense, we suffer. And that's a stage of evolution when survival is important. That too we have read. And then he described that we have distinguished the fourfold principle of divine being, creative of the universe, existence, consciousness force, bliss and supermind. So supermind of course is omnipresent and it is omniscience. So we come to next page. Page 233. So he says, then equally the principle of 4 or 5 lines from above, the principle of divine bliss must be omnipresent in the cosmos, veiled indeed and possessing itself behind the actual phenomenon of things, but still manifested in us through some subordinate principle of its own in which it is hidden and by which it must be found and achieved in the action of the universe. Now when we see this, we discover something very interesting. A lot of so-called development is to thwart man from actually entering and discovering this principle of delight. Because food at the doorstep, shopping at your fingertips, and the whole world which is claims to give you happiness, from the red drug in the market to everything else. So man is caught in the law of desire even when he wants to escape. And see, it is such a strange thing it works. So literally one is made to believe that if you are fair, you are beautiful. And then what happens? Next is fair and lovely cream. If you have black hair, it is better than all kinds of rangarogan. You know, all coloring creams. It's a game. And we are caught and trapped, sucked into the whirlpool of desires. We don't realize what this civilization, actually, how much it is worth saving is anybody can see. Whereas when life was simple, that's how he describes in Savitri, that how Savitri discovered the soul. And she says that she was a genius of titanic silences. And she describes the solitude. And spiritual life, one of the signs is that love for solitude. So this is how it develops, because we have to nurture and nourish ourselves. In that solitude, when external aids are not there to make us happy, or we can use them without that seeking fun, but generally what happens? We can use them as tool, like everything is a tool. Then one turns within to seek that principle of delight, because you are not getting it satisfied. So every time divine takes away some joy of ours, it is to give us a greater joy. It's a different thing altogether, that people and society hands over another toy. And we also feel very happy. After all, one toy gone, another toy come. Wait and watch. That is also a perishable product. So, that term is something in us which we sometimes call in a special sense the soul. That is to say, the psychic principle, which is not the life or the mind, much less the body. So, few lines below. In fact, however, there is a double soul or psychic term in us, as every other cosmic principle in us is also double. For we have two minds, not the two minds which are confused with each other, but the surface and the inner mind. We have already spoken about it. One, the surface mind of our expressed evolutionary ego. Surface mind, surface life, physical bodies, through the evolutionary process it has developed. And the other is, actually it belongs in a way to us, but it is open to the universal. So that's where we have this double. One, the surface mind of our expressed evolutionary ego, the superficial mentality created by us in our emergence out of matter. So those who are more identified with the surface, they basically have those stock ideas which they have got from their upbringing. And they just think that is ultimate and final. But those in whom inner mind has opened, inner life has opened, automatically they begin to get these creative surges, new thought, new. That's why the mother had used the word new idea. And they are misunderstood, obviously, if they are living in a kind of context. They are misunderstood because it's something new which has entered into their ken through an evolutionary uplifting. Whereas the surface doesn't have an evolutionary possibility. It can evolve in the end, but normally it is just the outer. So that's what Sri Aurobindo describes us here. We have already. So this surface is called, page 234, first line. So too we have a double psychic entity in us, the surface desire soul, which works in our vital cravings, our likes, dislikes, our emotions, aesthetic faculty, and mental seeking for power, knowledge, and happiness. This is the surface desire soul. And a subliminal psychic entity, a pure power of light, love, joy, and refined essence of being, which is our true soul. So, sign of this soul which is developing is it begins to at least seek for truth behind appearances. So, seeking for God, seeking for what is behind all this life, why it is the way it is. So, this is one sign of psychic awakening, truth. The second is good. So, it is shocked when it sees evil. It wants good to happen to this world. Sarve bhavantu sukhina. And truth, good and beauty. So, satyam, shivam, sundaram. In the beginning, it seeks for these things. Very secular things. Huh? It is not religious, that this religion has a soul. So it begins to seek for truth, good and beauty. And beauty changes. It, not just the physical. Physical is also there. But also beauty of thoughts, feelings. A developed psychic being cannot think in a like ill will or use rough language, abusive language. Because more than anybody, it will hurt himself. Because he'll feel something amiss. It cannot be crude in its feelings. It must have refined feelings. Noble feelings. It cannot be mean. It cannot be selfish. Because the psychic is developing. So solution again we see of the psychic development. So this is the whole evolution. And after truth, good and beauty, it begins to seek the divine directly. And initially it begins to seek the God lovers. And then it zeroes on to the path it has taken, the Sangha. And then it grows still further. And it begins to see the divine in all things and all beings. Wherever this psychic becomes active on a seashore, it can suddenly have that experience. Or looking at a tree or a flower, it can get in contact with the divine presence. Because that is the sign of the psychic emergence. So all that Shurbindo describes in great detail. Last paragraph here. It follows that in this surface or desired soul, there is no true soul life, but a psychic deformation and wrong reception of the touch of things. It's a deformation. Life is also seeking. We see surface life is seeking what? Happiness. It is seeking love. It is seeking all the things that we see that true soul already has. But this is a deformation. What is the deformation? The ego wants it my way. But in the psychic, they are already inbuilt. That's why it is said, instead of going outward, turn within, and you'll find all this. Page 235, somewhere in the middle. It is the desired soul that by its wrong reception of life becomes the cause of a triple misinterpretation of the rasa, the delight in things. So that instead of figuring the pure essential joy of being, it comes rendered unequally into the three terms of pleasure, pain and indifference. Actually, we can experience it even in ordinary life. For example, if we become impersonal. So a scientist who puts the cockroach under the microscope. Or worse still, frog. Half living frog. Because you have to, doctors we... Now, you are impersonal. So, you are not that time seeking the pain of the, seeing the pain of the frog, recoil, all this is not there. There is a seeking for knowledge. So, there is a universal sense behind it. You are not being repelled when you are cutting on a dead body. It's gory, no? There are 20, 30 dead bodies lying in. Every dead body is assigned to. And you even call it, this caddy is my mate. We had seven of us and we gave name. Each caddy had a name. You don't feel that, oh, some young fellow, he died. That's a fact. But there is another kind of relation. Same thing we see in painting. When a painter is painting, he gets delight even in what otherwise would be contrary to another person. He is able to discover beauty behind things which we normally don't notice. Beauty in a stone, in a blade of grass. It's amazing how the painting, painter, artist can discover beauty. Or a novelist. Look at Vyasa's Mahabharata. And just see that scene where Duryodhan is killing 100 children of Gandhari and thumping the chest of Dushasan, immortalized by Surdas. Dushasan ki bhuja okhadi. Now, if you imagine taking out the dismembering the hands is a gory scene, no? But when we read it in that, we are entering into that vast, something vast, and even there you discover the delight. So there is a rasa behind pleasure, pain and indifference, but we cannot experience it because we are living in this small consciousness. But this is not that in these creations we can enter into that ultimate delight, but these are hints that even in experiences would normally would give pain, when we take a trans-egoistic standpoint, like mother for a child, when a child suffers, mother suffers more, and she is ready to give, whatever it means, go through pain, but to make see that the child is safe and healthy, what is it? Normally it would give pain. How much ever sick a mother may be, when the child is coming home, she will, 2 days, she is busy making things, everything, and you try to tell, look here, you will fall sick. You keep quiet. She will fall sick, but she is getting a joy. So there is, we can experience something of it, and it comes because that love is much too deep. It has already entered into that third stage. So the real soul, last three lines on page 236, our real soul within takes joy of all its experiences, gathers from them strength, pleasure and knowledge, grows by them in its store and its plenty. It is this real soul in us which compels the shrinking desire mind to bear and even to seek and find a pleasure in what is painful to it, to reject what is pleasant to it. Why? Because this soul says, no, let the ego be crucified, let the desire be slain, it will give me pain, but I'll grow closer to the Lord. So it takes a joy in that. It's to modify or even reverse its values, to equalize things in indifference or to equalize them in joy, the joy of the variety of existence. So this is how this deeper soul acts more and more. And then just one part I'll read and then we'll stop. Okay, we are on page 238. Here Sri Aurobindo just touches. The true soul. So he is told there are two souls. Souls in the sense that we call it the soul. We call it myself. That's in that sense. The surface, vital, desired soul. We call it myself. And it is prone to pleasure, pain and indifference. So if we want to escape this law, if we don't want pain, we have to also not seek pleasure. See, the problem of ego is it always plays with duality. That's why Sri Aurobindo says, you seek one and the other will come. You buy one pleasure, two pains are already tagged along. Tagged. And if you are very evolved, five pains are tagged along. Because now divine is saying, look here, come out of this toy game. If you still don't listen, you will crash into the house and 10 pain will follow one small pleasure. That's how Vibhishan became vegetarian. That's how life operates. And we think, oh, why I have been a good guy? Why this happened to me? Precisely because you are a good guy and stuck with your goodness. You are not wanting to discover something more than goodness, greater than goodness, deeper than this surface existence where good and bad are intertwined. So this is how life operates. So Sri Aurobindo says, the true soul secret in us, subliminal as we have said, but the word is misleading because what it means, subliminal means below the threshold, but here it means behind the veil. So leaving aside, this veiled psychic entity on page 238, last about 10 lines from below. This is a beautiful line. This veiled psychic entity is the flame of the Godhead. Always alight within us. This is the Akhand Jyoti. This is the diya always burning, in which we can keep pouring as much oil. Oil is our luminous mentality. It grows when we pour oil. It grows when we put samida, that is our actions. That means we do not direct actions to gains, surface gains. But we direct actions Godward. So this grows. When we pour our mind into it, it grows. So that's how this is the inner flame, which is always alight within us. Nothing can finish it. Passions can cloud it. A storm can temporarily blind it. But this is inextinguishable. And who lights it is the Divine Mother. That's why the mothers, unnumbered, wonderful mother of unnumbered souls. It's a portion of the Divine Mother, a fiery portion of the wonderful. That's how Sri Aurobindo writes, artist of his own beauty and delight, passenger from life to life, from scale to scale. He regards the icons growing by its gaze and in the worm foresees the coming God. Sri Aurobindo, when he describes, then another place he describes that it is the secret honey in us, secret knowledge, he describes it, a witness fire which sees all things. It is the secret honey inside us, so we can touch it, a point that can become fathomless and universal. All this he describes in Savitri very beautifully and majestically. So here is, inextinguishable even by the dense unconsciousness of any spiritual self within which obscures our outward nature. That's why even Ratnakar can become a Valmiki, or an Angulimal can become Ananda, or Jagai and Madai can change completely, or Augustine can become a saint, precisely because even in the densest consciousness it is there. When somebody once told the mother, wicked soul, mother says, what do you know? Soul is never wicked. It may be small or big, It's a portion of the divine. It's a divine mother's portion in us. It may be identified with life, mind and body and suffer, but deep within it is always knows the divine, and hence if we touch that psychic part, that's how it should be. It is the concealed witness and control, Sakshi and Anumanta, Ishwara, the hidden guide, the demon of Socrates, the inner light or inner voice of the mystic. So this is what we see, the demon of Socrates. The soul values are very different. So when we'll close with this, Socrates was, we know, was granted him, was punished for corrupting the youth and their morals. So they punished him with hemlock. And on the last day, his disciple Crito says, bribed everybody. So he comes to meet Socrates 2 hours before he has to take hemlock. So he says, Master, come, we'll escape. He says, no, I'm not escaping. He consulted his demon and he... So he says, I have bribed everybody, there is no problem. He thought he's afraid. He says, no, no, nothing will happen. All of them have the silver guineas with them. So he says, no, I don't accept it. Why? His standpoint was not moral. It's something he had foreseen. So he's very disappointed. Then he says, Master, what can I do for you? So he takes the hemlock and he begins to, he says, you stay here. Then as he's taking hemlock, see how evolved person's thoughts. So just when the poison is going to finally stop his heart, he says, Kritos, one thing. Oh, yes, Master. You know, I owe a hen to someone. I had taken it and not given it back. Will you? He doesn't even complete. And he says, yes, Master. Yes, Master. He doesn't want to die with a burden that, you know, somebody's. And so it is, as it develops, its values are different. Now imagine Socrates running away. Imagine Christ breaking free from the cross by some magic lightning, thunder, and Christ jumped from there and vanished. He would not be Christ. That's how this idea. Because the values are Krishna destroying his own people. Because he saw they've become arrogant. Yadavas, out of the three dynasties, only Chandravanshis, Suryavanshi and Yaduvanshi. So, two were already finished. Now only, I mean, they would grow later on. Only person left was the Yaduvanshis, though they branched out from the Chandravanshis. So, they had become very arrogant, and Shri Krishna wanted to make sure that all the arrogant fellows go. His own people, he sees they are getting destroyed. He could have stopped, but he lets them go. And he drowns Dwarka later on. That Dwarka, which was drowned in Arabian Sea, has come out on the eastern coast as Auroville. So, stop. Okay, we'll come back at 6:15 in 5-7 minutes and conclude.